Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today.
Hey, this is Eric with 30x40 Design Workshop with a heads up that all of my content will be streaming on Gable Media. Starting October 7th, you can head on over to gablemedia.com/video to check it out.
Hi everyone, my name is Steven and I am the creator of Show It Better. And I'm glad to announce that Show It Better is now streaming on Gable Media. Visit gablemedia.com/video to catch up on our full catalog.
Hello, my name is Demetrius. This is Jason.
Morning, everyone.
And you're listening to Spaces Podcast Express. Thank you for coming back, everybody. Jason, we have a guest that's joining us today. He is a vice president of Alloy Development, Jeff Sullivan. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I'm with Alloy Development. We are a architecture and development firm in Brooklyn, New York. We're located in an area called Dumbo, down under Manhattan Bridge Overpass, for those who don't know the acronym. Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about, just quick synopsis of your background and then a little bit more about Alloy.
Sure. I'm an architect here at Alloy. I also have a construction management background, came from a construction family growing up. We are a development firm first and foremost, but we are all architects. So we are, 12 individuals more or less. I would say all but maybe two are architects. I think we have 8 licensed architects within the office. We were founded back in 2006 with kind of the idea of, as an architect, how do we take more ownership over the projects we do? And so with that, we've done a handful of projects through the city, and the last 5 now have been focused right near our office here in Dumbo in Brooklyn. They are all, within a block or two distance from us, which is pretty nice these days. And we go from everything from townhouses that we've done that are about, we did 5 townhouses that were, total of like 20,000 square feet altogether, to another local one that's about 100,000 square feet, and a future project that's our largest development yet, that's a full block redevelopment in Brooklyn of almost 1 million square feet. So our skill sets vary, internally. Everyone has kind of a very interdisciplinary background, which makes for a fun, more active culture within the office, and kind of get your hands in a lot of different parts of the architecture, development, and construction process altogether.
Yeah, that's so fascinating that you guys are set up that way. It's sort of the future, I think, for architects, is to try and put on that development hat, just because the industry has made architecture such a commodity and just constantly pushing down on fees, that I think it's sort of the only route for architects to go, is to start to get some of that responsibility back on their plate. Who is the principal, or is there a group of people that started the firm? And do you know some insight into sort of the thinking in starting the company that way?
Yeah, so the three principals, there's AJ Pyres, Catherine McConvey, and Jared Delavalle. Jared and Catherine started originally, and AJ was very soon after became part of the team. The concept itself was funny. I think Jared came from a similar background as myself. We actually both went to Washington University in St. Louis, obviously at different times. But he had he was a construction management degree, master's construction management as well as architecture. Had a, I think his senior thesis even was this kind of combination of architecture and development. It was, I wouldn't say shelved, but a pet project for a while. And then when it came to fruition back in 2006, there were opportunities for them to team up and actually do this sort of thing. I would say the, in a lot of ways, the structure kind of goes back to the kind of master builder, traditional kind of architect definition, which I think we really like to get into the details and take the ownership of things. And so I think one of the opportunities that we found early on as a team was when you are the architect and you are the owner, you know, you're making decisions that are, you really start to question the value of the decision. Where is this worth it, where I'm taking this out of my pocket to pay for it? And it's not something that you shake and falls off the building. You want it to be part of the building. It has an inherent value, and you start to redefine that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's evolved over the years. I think we've grown to include also like brokerage. So we do our own sales for condominium projects.
Wow.
That's a whole level of complexity.
I mean, that's a whole different, yeah.
And I think what you were saying too about fees and things like that, one of the things we try to do, I think, is valuable, is diversify, right? So, you know, there's fee structure from brokerage sales. There's obviously development fees. There's architect fees. There's we do a lot of our own marketing and things like that. We also have, for a brief period, had our own construction company. So we did our townhouses called 55 Pearl. We did those with our own construction company. I think we recognized, as I'm sure Jason probably knows, is for our scale, which is 12 people who focus on development and architecture in very limited scale, as a project, as a company, you upscale, you just need a larger back of house. You need a larger, you know, infrastructure in your system to really support the 100,000 square feet buildings, things like that. And I think for us, we just recognized our value as a construction company was the fine detail in a townhouse, not the 100,000 square foot scale building that, you know, we started to want to do as a development firm.
I'm kind of curious, when you guys go from an architecture situation where you guys are primarily in design, or at least that's what your background is, right? Or you go to school to be trained that way classically, when you decide to all of a sudden bolt on, and I'm making that sound immediate, obviously that probably wasn't the case, but we decided to bolt on, you know, the construction side, the development side. Are you guys essentially working with a contractor to do that and subbing that portion out? Or because there's a whole other training piece and education piece that goes along with that, right? So I'm curious as to how that all gets kind of intertwined. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think in specifically the construction portion, when that happened, we had people who had traditional construction experience, but were also trained architects in some level. And so there was a knowledge base there of how to do that portion at that scale. I think when it came to labor force and things like that, we found people to sub out with that we felt like would help us on site. We had a foreman who was an architect who was part of our office. We had a person in-house who was in the office doing the, you know, the submittals that literally would send from one person's desk to another. The person would review it and send it back to the other person. And so we're all in a big open room. And so there's a lot of conversation where if you see something, you go kind of talk to each other. On the development side, we are at a point now where we're bringing in CMs on a project, whether they're early and they're helping us go through the buyout phase. And they kind of structure the system that way. And as developers and architects, we're talking through our own design intent with them and what we're trying to achieve to help get us there.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Jeff, did you prior to Alloy, did you work in a, quote, more recent traditional architecture firm, or did you start with Alloy?
I did in some way. So going back a little bit further, my parents have a construction company. And so growing up, I was in construction my whole life. And then architecture school happened. I actually met Jared, who's a partner here, through grad school, and learned kind of about this. I actually went originally, it was 2009, 2010. So the market was a little bit questionable, but I actually went to Leroy Street Studio. So they're in Manhattan. They do more traditional architecture, but they have also a design build arm of them called BLDG. Worked with them a little bit for a couple years doing, but mainly actually did real, I'd say, traditional architecture that you're describing. And I would say probably 50-60% of our firm people have some sort of traditional background in architecture, just to have trained and worked somewhere for a little while.
And the reason I ask is we probably have some listeners. I know the conversation goes around a lot in previous firms that I was in. There are people that are architects that want to get into development, like completely transfer into the developer side, or they want to start their own architect developer setup or be a part of that sort of team. Can you sort of summarize what you think the differences are and sort of benefits of a setup like that?
Sure. I think first and foremost, the development is not like a hobby. And I don't think you guys are suggesting that, but I think sometimes people think, oh, I'll be an architect, but I'll dabble in development.
Yeah.
Development is there is a lot of knowledge, whether it's learned through process or it formally, just exposure, et cetera. It takes a lot of time to learn it. And I've been here just shy of a decade. And while I focus primarily on architecture, I can't pretend to be an expert in development, but I've absorbed a lot through that process. I think there are differences for that people. When I first went from it was a high-end residential, very robust details, et cetera, in my more traditional architecture role. Here, I think we're creating and redefining that relationship a little bit differently. I think the best way myself that I've described it to friends who are all architects is it's almost like we're creating a palette for people. So in our projects, we are creating a palette where we get people there, we create the formwork, the structure for people then to take ownership into really great spaces that then they can do that next level of architecture to. In most cases, people come in and then they bring in an architect to kind of fit out the space to how they want. So whether it's removal of a wall or whatever, to millwork, et cetera. And so where it differs is while we do millwork details and things like that, we aren't doing hyper specific, a light cove that carves into a window that has a special trim detail, because we just don't know the exact particular nature of someone's who's going to buy it, who's going to be part of it. And what I found really interesting is, in I think a traditional role, the owners, the clients, they're involved every step of the way of the process. So they get delivered a product, they feel ownership over it in a sensibility, in that sense, where we, for many reasons, have to just deliver them something complete, free of permits, free of, everything, where they can then do their thing. And so I think there's a little bit of a transition from a client being involved and having a sense of ownership in the process to now they take it and they're going to mold it into their own kind of thing, which is great. And I think our goal is to set up the best possible thing for them to achieve a successful project.
Yeah.
I think at the same time, one of the things I love is our client relationship's very different. We are the clients. And so we don't, we are hyper efficient. We are all in a room together. We all know 3D software, whether it's Rhino or some other, you know, system, and we're spinning around a model, and someone's pointing to a thing and saying, yeah, I like that, I don't like that, how do we do this? And you make decisions on the fly. You're not guessing who likes what and what the owner wanted. You're not making five layouts that look pretty that then they're like, that's not at all what I was talking about. And so, you know, there's a level of efficiency that really great for ideas and passing information and communication, which I think is one of the harder things in a more traditional architecture setup.
What I think is interesting though, when you're talking about how many people are involved in that process, I think you guys internally, you're saying you all get together pretty harmoniously in that design process, because normally you involve more than two, three opinions. I mean, you're looking at just a whole bunch of soup, right?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I would say I've always appreciated, and I think it's a great precedent that the partners have set, and I think we all try to set for our employees, is we're relatively ego-free in a lot of ways. And what we say is best design wins. And we have parts in our projects that were intern ideas, parts that the partners had where they brought a Rhino model that they worked on at, you know, midnight or whatever when they had time. There's like you slap sketches on the board. Everyone kind of comes in for a charrette as we're going through stuff. And it's a literal open environment. You know, the partners intentionally don't cubicle themselves off because they want people to hear the conversations. They want them to know why we're making a decision. But, you know, the facade's over budget and we need for X, Y, and Z reasons. And so there's that level of open communication, which is really, I think, helpful to the process.
That's awesome.
Now, what are you working on now? You had mentioned a pretty huge development project that you guys are taking on right now.
Yeah, we have two projects. So we really try to focus only on two projects at a time. One is 168 Plymouth, which is 96,000 square feet in Dumbo here near our office. It is a masonry, like brick and timber building, and a concrete building, 12 stories, 46 condo units, warehouse conversion, last lofts in Dumbo area. The other one is called, I think it was originally 80 Flatbush. The first phase is 100 Flatbush, and it's in downtown Brooklyn, which is a really interesting, amazing area. It is where the Barclays, so where the Nets play, is kind of right across the street. There's probably the second most subway lines infrastructure in the city passing through there. So it's a very transit-rich area. And so we probably 5 years ago went through a process with the city to rezone the entire city block. So we had control and ownership over probably two-thirds of the block. The other portion was an existing school called the Cahill Gibran International Academy. And their facilities were completely outdated. They were from, you know, 1890, 1860. And this building just was not a good modern school from any perspective. No ADA, no elevators, no gym, you know, just the facilities needed upgrading. And so we worked with the city to go through what's called ULURP, which essentially is a rezoning process, which involves, it's probably a year-long process at least, that involves various agencies, whether it's the community board, the borough president, the city planning, and then finally our council member vote. And so we were able to upzone the site and essentially generate a total development of almost 1 million square feet. So it's a big project. It's multi-phased. The first phase, which we're working on now, is a tower and a school. The school is actually a combination of two schools, a new one for that Cahill Gibran Academy, one for lower school. It's going to be the first passive house school in the city, which we're really excited about. And then the tower is about 300,000 square feet, plus or minus, 200 and something of that is residential, and about 100,000 office, and then some retail. It's going to be the first electric tower in all electric tower in Brooklyn, which we're also really excited about from a sustainability and kind of forward thinking carbon free sort of perspective.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's been interesting to kind of try to rewrite that when you have to when you draw up a whole new zoning plan.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't even imagine. Jeff, so we're up against it today. We'll have to have you back and maybe focus in on one of those projects. That one sounds pretty cool. Do like a long form episode on that one, because there's a lot of components to that.
Yeah, it's just describing the whole getting through the process could take an hour every time we have to pitch it. But I really appreciate the time. This is a fun conversation. And obviously, the I think the evolution of the architect's role is going to be, ever changing, especially going forward now. But I appreciate you guys making time.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Before we get out of here though, is there social media or website, anything you want to plug?
Yeah. Our website is alloyllc.com. So it's relatively straightforward. We have links to our projects there. Be great to learn more about what we're doing. The more section is pretty fun. We push pretty heavily for involvement in the community. There's a lot of things to learn from there that we're working on, projects, we have artist opportunities and things like that that we try to get engaged with, which is a whole nother half of what we try to do. So,
all right. Thanks again. To the listeners, thank you for listening. We have an episode that just came out on fire safety. So check that out. And other than that, we will talk again on Tuesday. Thanks. This show is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. You can help support what we're doing here by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps others find us, and your support is the only way that this show grows. And don't forget to connect with us through our Facebook community, Instagram, and see the random thoughts and articles that we share on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you again for spending some time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually in putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk, and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.